name is Mike Selig, and this is KXRW's The Good Ship Earth, where we examine the challenges we face and explore the opportunities we have to make life on this good ship Earth more peaceful and prosperous for everyone. I recently had the chance to talk with the editor of the book America's Jihad, Dan Sokol. Dan is retired from military service and lives in Vancouver. He has a BA in criminal justice and a master's in public administration. Dan is busy working with many nonprofit organizations in his, quote, retirement. He helped start the Community Military Appreciation Committee, also known as CMAC. CMAC supports veterans, military families, police, fire service members, and other first responders. America's Jihad is a collection of 24 essays that help examine how we were once a United States, but have become the divided states. Dan's skills as a communications intelligence analyst for the Army gives him a unique perspective to see through the smoke from the war of rhetoric in our divided states.
If I may, I'd like to start with the blurb on Amazon for your book. Your observations are that the United States is in relative isolation, and educationally speaking, we're kind of dysfunctional how we execute foreign policy based on these misunderstandings about how the world works, and particularly the Middle East. You mentioned that higher education, public or private, has kind of subordinated or ignored geography. So we're staying ignorant, and we are paying a price. Could you tell me a little bit more about how you felt about the way we operated in the Middle East?
Well, the motivations out there that we oftentimes are not seeing or aware of is to perpetuate conflict in what Eisenhower warned us about in terms of the military-industrial complex, certainly has borne out, and then the political-industrial complex and other agendas behind the scene, I guess for lack of a better word, that keep taking us in a direction that is antithetical to the ideals that we think we stand for as a country, or at least we'd like to strive for. And when I was talking about education, I think the lack of religions of the world or something of that nature, or world cultures in our middle school or certainly high school curricula, is something that is handicapping us significantly. Because we're not prepared going into adulthood, whether we are going from high school into the military or going into quote-unquote higher education or any other vocation, that we're, there's just not a, to use a military term, there's not a situational awareness that we need to have. So the issue that I ran into in Iraq, and then shared when I came back, was the extent to which we were confusing religion and culture when it comes to Islam and then radical Islam, which is Islamism, which is, many would say, is the hijacking of a religion to further a political ideology, i.e. terrorism. So we have ourselves at a disadvantage when it comes to dealing with international challenges. Our media is very United States centric. What's happening on the left coast or the right coast, however you might want to look at it, we're insulated from the rest of the world, and we allow ourselves to be actually isolated from the rest of the world by virtue of the Pacific and Atlantic oceans, and focusing on all the problems and the trials and tribulations here at home and looking for somebody to blame. And so we've, of all the levels of conflict that I've dealt with over my lifetime, the root cause has, in my mind, my estimation, always been ineffective communications, ineffective or lacking in educational enlightenment, for lack of a better word. Our empathy is, I guess, has been ignored, subordinated, or not emphasized, certainly, to the extent that it needs to be. Humans are so different across the entire spectrum that too many idealists just don't seem aware of. And you can respect the idealism for sure and say, you know, they're trying to be understanding and compassionate and sympathetic and maybe striving to be empathetic without very effectively doing so. And so you've got that ongoing dilemma, and then you've got two political tribes, I refer to them as well as a media that thrives on conflict, that perpetuates conflict. Politically speaking, in our country, but I think it's the same just about everywhere, there's an effort by our so-called leadership to, instead of solve problems, to actually perpetuate them. And by that, I mean they're looking for issues upon which they can raise money, whether it's for the Democrats, for pro-abortion, pro-choice, or whether it's for the Republicans, for pro-life, anti-abortion, however they want to caption it that they think is going to bring in the most funds for their party's coffers, that this happens elsewhere as well. But as idealistically as we as Americans look at what an advanced country we are and well-educated we are and so on, in so many ways, we're actually ignorant and being manipulated on a daily basis. That's what I find sad.
You mentioned the myopic viewpoint we have, and couple of things. I remember, you know, when I was growing up, I'm 65 right now, but I watched David Brinkley and Chet Huntley and they talked about the news, and they may have had some kind of slight bias, but they were objective journalists, and the three networks provided news as almost a loss leader for the right to operate on the public airwaves. They provided news as a public service. It seems when things got commercialized and then cable came on, when they weren't under such restrictions, they saw news, quote, news, as a moneymaker.
And entertainment, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so rather than inform people so they can make better decisions, it seems that it's like, how can we get clicks? How can we get views? How can politicians are, what's the hot button issues? And how can we get more money donated? If you could wave a magic wand with all of these factors in place that are driven by, frankly, greed and fear and confusion and ignorance, if you could wave your magic wand and cure the problem, what would be your wish as to how to kind of pull everybody's head out of the sand and, you know, do better, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, well, I think we adults are probably too many of us in our generation and others are stuck in what we've learned. There was once a guy by the name of Massey, I think, out of a Texas university that had this, you are what you were when, and talked about the influences of your 0 to 10 age and 10 to 20 and so on of what was going on in the world at that time. And to an extent, I think that was looking at the newscasts and the objectivity that you just mentioned, or at least the perceived objectivity, or at least an effort towards objectivity, and how much that's changed. And so the conclusion that I've come to, which is why another veteran and I have started this guest speakers bureau, is to try to get more real life experiences and lessons learned and things of that nature, the value of ethics and integrity and character into our K through 12 education. Because I think often with good intentions, but sometimes with bad intentions, that our education system is what has most failed us over the last 20, 30 years. And the emphasis on other aspects of life, whether it's the arts or whether it's your self-identity and so on, and some of those constructs, which have set aside or even overlooked or omitted teaching civics, teaching history, teaching not just U.S. history, but world history. And as I mentioned earlier, culture versus religion. And the trick is, of course, doing those things even-handedly, that, you know, it has the good, the bad, and the ugly, and doesn't put a focus on or elevate any one country or culture or religion over any of the others. Just here's what has happened. Here's the basic humanity that we would love to unify us, and here's all the factors that have come to divide us, and often with a political agenda behind it.
Yeah. Would you include teaching critical thinking skills in that?
Oh, absolutely. Totally.
This, you know, I have... this is very hopeful, and having worked with kids taught in classrooms on a limited basis, I understand what you mean by reaching kids whose minds are open, aren't loaded up with a lot of information, et cetera, and there's kind of a despair in the fact that maybe us adults are just too intellectually landlocked. We may have too much stuff in our heads and too many things we think we know are true, but perhaps aren't. Is it completely hopeless to reach adults? And for those who want to learn, who, you know, have principles they want to live by, and at some point may discover, maybe I'm not on the right track. Maybe this source of information isn't the best for me to listen to. Are a percentage of the adult population reachable in some form or fashion?
Well, I would like to think so. I think if we could unify behind the original definition of liberal, as in open-minded, you know, seeking to exchange information and ideas and come to collaborative solutions, that if we can return to that ideal, but I think we've strayed so far from it, and there's so much vilification of the other side, and again, a lot of that done with political motivations in order to fundraise instead of actually solve the problem.
I'd like to take a short break to say thank you to two business members of KXRW's support community.
A big thank you to our founding partners at Morrell Inc. Print and Marketing for their ongoing support of community radio. Morrell Inc. is a woman-owned, union-staffed, state-of-the-art print shop that since 1993 has offered high-quality, creative, and innovative printing and marketing solutions. Morrell Inc.'s experienced staff creates partnerships with their clients and uses the latest technologies to meet their needs. More information about which of Morrell Inc.'s products, printing, and marketing strategies will best serve your next project and budget can be found at morrellinc.com. That's MORELINK.com.
A big thank you to Vancouver's own Kagan's Theatre for supporting our radio community. Our historic Kagan's Theater has a long tradition of showing movies for our community, 85 years. Kagan's currently features first-run big studio and art house films, along with classic movie revival. Check out their live events, and you can even book the theater for a private party or public event. Go to KagansTheater.com to see how you can rediscover the joy of going out for movie night again. showtimes, booking information, and more at KagansTheater.com. Dan can't talk about some of his work in military intelligence. What he was able to talk about is his work as research manager and cultural advisor with human terrain teams in Kirkuk and Baghdad, Iraq.
It sounds strange, but it's not just looking at the geography of the terrain, but looking at the indigenous population and the culture. And it's becoming more aware of what motivates the folks. And in our case, it was going in there and asking what they needed instead of going in as Americans and saying, we're here to deliver democracy to you. Isn't that wonderful? And for too many tribal cultures, that's just a foreign concept, and we're not going to enable them to make that leap. But many of the foreign policy gurus thought that that's what we're going to do, by golly, and we're going to bring peace to the world by showing folks how great our democratic republic is, or democracy in general. When we first went into Iraq, the Shia, which were the majority of the Muslims as opposed to the Sunni, saw us coming in as freeing them as the majority population to then take over the country. And that created chaos, to say the least. And then when there was a purge of the Ba'ath Party, then that created a huge void in the government and resulted in the chaos. And essentially that was the firing of the Iraqi military that led to them turning against us as invaders instead of bringing them freedom or liberating them. When the Ba'ath Party was purged and their military was essentially fired, we created one huge insurgency in the process of that.
Right. And
that was J. Paul Bremer that did that.
Right. I remember that. And the average American doesn't know a thing about that and are stuck in bad guys versus good guys. And we have, and a lot of us have an understanding that we're the good guys. We're always the good guys. A lot of that is carryover from, I think, World War II, where we were the good guys. In most circumstances, we had a insane person running rampant in Europe and killing, gassing Jews, invading country after country, and we came in and took care of that. But like you said, you referred back to President Eisenhower's, it was his departure speech as president. He said, by necessity, we have created a military-industrial complex that we've, paraphrasing here, but we got to keep an eye on this because it could get out of control.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's having grown up watching, you know, accounts of the Vietnam War on television, it seemed that the people on the ground were dealing with the same type of human terrain. One side would say, we'll give you $50 to set a mine or do whatever, and then would come back and say, here's another $50 to do something against them. And we were devastating their land. They don't have an economy. The economy itself is war. And it's the most costly type of economy. And I don't know if it's me, but I get this sense that we're at a crisis point or a turning point where we're going to see so many examples of how not to do things. We're going to get it through our heads that there are better ways. And I see your efforts, based on your experience, I see your efforts as really being part of hopefully changing the way we behave, the way we treat others in this global community. Do you think COVID has isolated so many people there, it has limited the source of where they get information or could even have discussions. It seems that when we're more isolated, we can become more certain of something that is not true and more fearful. It just seems like it was like pouring gasoline on the fire.
Well, I think in the sense that you just touched upon, that the more isolated we become, the more inclined we are to go down some rabbit hole, or more vulnerable to the manipulations that go on out there. And the more stuff we're bombarded with through the social media and the various online platforms, I think that those who would exploit people and drive them towards further division and distrust of one another, I think that the COVID restrictions and limitations and the resulting isolation has opened the door that much wider for folks who would exploit that situation to do so.
I wish we had more time to talk about human terrain systems and how we might apply it in our country so we could help close the divide. However, it's time for another short break.
KXRW would like to thank Craft Cannabis, our exclusive cannabis sponsor, for supporting our radio community. Their wide variety of products range from edibles, pre-rolls, concentrates, vapes, CBD topicals, tinctures, and much more. Craft Cannabis for 21 and over now has two locations in Vancouver. The newest shop is on Andreessen Road off Patton Parkway next to Home Depot. The Mill Plain location is in the Heights Shopping Center. Ordering options include online, in-person, curbside, and express window touchless pickup to better serve you. Hours and information available at craftcannabis.com.
In this last part of our conversation, Dan told me about his work with the Community Military Appreciation Committee.
It's something that speaks to my passion, and that's collaboration. There's no requirement that you be a veteran to be a member of CMAC. Just attend a meeting. There's no dues, and show your interest in the community, support of veterans, support of first responders, support of all those that we might perceive to be on the front lines. With Heroes Night, that was a vision of a couple of folks, I think three people working in the marketing section of the East Vancouver Costco around, I want to say, 2013. And the original thrust of that was to honor our veterans. And boy, did all the staff out there at that Costco ever get into it. All their attire, all the decorations, everything about it was shouting thank you to all the veterans groups in the area, and certainly all the veterans that attended, and elevating that appreciation for our veterans. After a couple of years of co-organizing that, it occurred to me that a lot of our police officers, sheriff's deputies, and others that were showing up, and firefighters, were also veterans. And so we expanded it to recognize and thank our military veterans and certainly all those who serve on the front lines here at home, as well as those who have served on the front lines overseas. And so that expanded to from veterans to first responders, and then medical, and then even educators became among those that we honored. Starting next year, June 24th, we're going to be doing Heroes Night then and forevermore, hopefully, at the Pearson Air Museum and adjacent hangar, and the tarmac area, still including car show. And there'll be much better coordination for folks to come and participate. So it's a great bridge between the civilian or non-military members of the community with those who have served or are serving on the front lines in protecting us all.
This is such a worthy cause. The people who are involved, their heart's in the right place, and it's fun. If somebody wanted to learn more about CMAC and or donate to the effort to serve local military veterans, first responders, is there a website they could go to learn or donate?
Yep, CMAC11, just 1-1, CMAC11.com. And that has a great deal of information about the organization and who's a part of it. Our meetings, sometimes you have to dig a little bit at the website to find when the next meeting is going to be. We're having our first board meeting in probably a year or longer on August 12th, where we meet at the 48-8. 48-8 is an organization that was founded some time ago in recognition of those who have served. The 48-8 stands for the boxcars, the train cars back in World War I that were designated for 40 personnel or 8 horses. And that's what was going back and forth to the front lines. And so it was all about the honor of what went on back in World War I. And they helped, as well as the city of Vancouver and the Historic Trust, they helped in founding Community Military Appreciation Committee back in 2013 or whenever that was, 2011, I think.
Well, if you talk about a big misunderstanding leading to war, World War I, I'm still confused on how that started, but it does seem that it was a war that didn't have to happen. I might be wrong in that, but man, the human devastation, the human terrain, how it was devastated, it had a lasting effect that we deal with to this day.
Dan, what's saddest is look at what's happening in Ukraine today.
Yes.
How can this possibly happen in 2022? And so many of the issues that you just mentioned, to touch upon, the loss of lives, the massive artillery barrages, and so on. Here's Russia doing it to Ukraine. Oh, my God.
We have to do something. The people who feel that charge, you're an example. You're doing something to get people to come to a place of understanding, because what is going on in too many places in our country and the world cannot continue. It is not a sustainable path. And the war in Ukraine is a wonderful illustration of that. There's a lot of people making money off that war. There is a lot of, you know, leaders who may be in their heads may be in some kind of sociopathic cloud, but this is unsustainable. So Dan Sokol, thank you so much for your time. I am very grateful for this hour plus, but I'm also very grateful for the work you did in serving your country, but also the work you've done when you were quote unquote retired.
Well, thanks to you, Mike. I mean, you're in your own fashion. You're on the front lines as well, trying to find a better way for this community to achieve its potential. And I'm happy to be a part of that.
I'm very grateful that we've had time to talk and look forward to us working in the future.
Likewise. Absolutely, Mike. I think we're two kindred souls here.
Great. Thank you so much, and okay, have a wonderful afternoon.
Thanks. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
My deepest thanks to Dan Sokol for his service to our country and our community. The all-volunteer staff at KXRW works hard to serve our community as well. If you'd like to learn more about the station and our shows, including mine, you can go to kxrw.fm. You can help support us and get some cool merch by clicking on the donate button on the homepage. My name is Mike Selig. Thank you for listening to The Good Ship Earth.